From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in your car, in your shower, maybe even on stage. Whether or not you like the sound of your voice, and I don't, it's part of human nature to sing, to hum, and there will be a lot of that today around the world because today is International Make Music Day. The holiday celebrating music in all of its forms began 36 years ago in France, and now it's in more than 120 countries around the world. So people of all ages and backgrounds are supposed to head outside, make music with friends and strangers, including right here in Rochester. So you can get outside right now to join in the celebrations around town, or you can stick around with Connections for the hour and then go do that. Our guests are going to tell us how they make music and where we can find music throughout our area. We're also going to have what we're calling a bit of a singing intervention. If you're afraid to sing, if you really think that you can't do it, our guests are going to try to help you get over that fear. And there are benefits to carrying a tune, by the way. Research shows that making music helps reduce stress, improve memory, and singing helps alleviate snoring. In case you are a snorer or you know one. My guests this hour are not snorers. Well, they might be, but they sing, and they are music lovers, and they have come from wonderful backgrounds in their own right. Gerard Floriano is artistic director of the Finger Lakes Opera. It's great to see you in studio here. We've only spoken on the phone. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan. It's great to be here.
Lee Wright is the director of music ministry at Downtown Presbyterian Church and founder of First Inversion Choir. First of all, welcome. And second of all, tell us about First Inversion. What's that?
First Inversion is a group that I started in 2014. And our mission is to promote uninhibited, fearless music making at a very high level.
I love it. And Brenda Tremblay knows something about that.
I have sung with Lee ever since the beginning, I think. And yeah. I just love it. Lee does a great job of pushing everyone to the upper levels of their abilities and encouraging vulnerability at the same time, which is a really tricky thing when you're dealing with people and their voices and their egos, their fragile little egos.
Brenda, of course, is our colleague from down the hall, Classical 91.5. It's always nice to have her. And on the line with us is Richard Fink IV, the vocal coach, founder of Throga.
Hello, Evan.
Richard, I love the term Throga. Tell me what Throga is.
Well, it originally stemmed from just slamming two wonderful words together, throat and yoga. And the premise is really about balancing the voice, not style specific. So it kind of has a scientific approach as to how to strengthen, balance, and gain flexibility with the instrument, regardless of the background and regardless of how you want to express it.
All right, so I know some people are hearing this going, okay, listen, I will sing in the car, maybe in the shower, if I know that no one is around and the neighbors cannot hear it. But otherwise, I can't sing. I'm not a great singer. What's the point? What are you doing to me? Brenda Tremblay, you came to me with this idea. So what's the encouragement here?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't like the sound of my own singing voice. I never have.
But you can, like, objectively sing.
Well, that's the question. That's the whole point of the show. Like, what does that mean, you know? And the first thing when I moved to Rochester in 1991 is I auditioned for the Rochester Oratorio Society. I walked in. I was right out of college. I sang my heart out for the conductor at the time, Roger Wilhelm. Mm-hmm. And then I was promptly damned by faint praise. He said, you have a nice, accurate voice. I think we can use you, were his exact words. And so I started singing with the Oratorio Society. And ever since then, I feel like I've been sort of chipped away at.
Oh, hold on here. I thought this was like going to be a story of rejection. You didn't make it.
Oh, no. That was last year. I was totally rejected last year. No. I have been rejected, and that's a whole other story. But anyway, the interesting tension for me is not really necessarily liking the way my singing voice sounds in my own head, but at the same time, finding so much joy and meaning in doing it.
But you know, Brenda, when you sing in a choir, that's the beautiful thing. I think, and I'm sure Lee will agree with me. Richard, I don't know you, but I bet you'd agree with me. But when you sing in a choir, the great thing about a choir is that all different types of voices of diverse sounds and diverse timbres and diverse, you know, quirks and positive things as well, blend together into one really wonderful homogenous, hopefully one homogenous, wonderful big sound and dramatic sound. And that's the idea behind a choir.
So maybe, Richard, we all just need to go join a choir.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is an amazing experience. You can learn so much about yourself. And I think there's a lot to, you know, just kind of backing off that. In the choir scenario, just like you were saying, everyone's got different, you know, little imbalances, or we can call them flaws or imperfections, but those are the very qualities that identify us uniquely. And there's an infinite combination of combining those unique instruments, those unique mm-hmm. personalities into a choir, so you always get something new every time. And that's why it's such an amazing experience to be a part of.
Now, Lee, you're someone who helps people get over their fears, I think, not just for a choir setting. I know you do choir work, but mm-hmm. what if someone says, look, okay, there's research that indicates it's actually good for our physical well-being, our mental well-being, there's psychological benefits to singing, but everyone looks at me sideways when I do it. I'm not sure I'm great at it. So there's confidence issues, there's quality issues. Where do you start with somebody?
Well, you know, just a few minutes ago when I was downstairs, I walked in, signed in, and I was talking with someone about the show I was about to do, and immediately they tell me how they can't sing. And I'd say that's true for about 99.8% of the people that I meet in this world. Or when someone finds out what I do, the first thing they say is, oh, well, you wouldn't want me in your choir.
Why are we like that, though? Why? I mean, everyone has one good note, right?
Well, because we want to be good. And we have to let go of that if we're going to do it. And it's, for some reason, you know, we expect that, well, someone's either a good singer or they're not. And that the idea that everyone can sound terrible doesn't really, or terrible in our, you know, in our sense of whatever that means, you know, that we don't just, you know, that people that are good at it probably do it a lot. And people that are a little less good at it, do it less. So do it more and you'll get better.
And I think I think the fear of failure, too, is a big issue with people. And I think you just have to kind of get over that fear, whether it's through singing with other people or what have you. But, you know, in our lives, in other aspects, too, we're afraid of failure. And to be a singer or to participate in a choral ensemble or to participate as a soloist in any way, shape, or form, you have to get over that fear and really go for it. Because the other thing that's really true about singing is that it's a very physical activity. And if you do it halfway or if you only do it halfway, it's like throwing a ball but stopping your arm in the middle of the motion and letting it go. You won't complete the throw and it won't go anywhere. So to sing and to sing well, you have to get over that fear of failure, I think, which we all have in us at some point, and many of us have overcome it at an early age. But get over that and then really go for it. Be bold and use your body, use your physical gifts to make that happen.
Is there a way, Richard, to sort of I don't know if it's stretch out our voice for our range. I mean, I'm going to use terms that are probably bungled here since I'm not in your line of work. But I remember being in college and I desperately wanted to learn how to play guitar, which my twin brother could play very, very well. And I noticed that he never had trouble getting a date. So I wanted to learn how to play guitar and I wanted to become a better singer enough that I could get away with doing open mics and stuff like that. And I remember there was a song that I wanted to do, but there was a section at the end where I had to really, really belt it to get close. And so, Richard, I was in a parking garage which had beautiful echoes, which is a great way of massaging all the rough, terrible, the cantankerous parts of our voice that don't quite get there. And I thought, I want to do everything in a garage or an echo chamber because then it just massages everything. But I thought if I belt more, can you kind of train your voice to reach new places, Richard?
Well, yeah, let me address that. I love that you suggested the comparison to guitar, because I want to look at that for a moment to answer your question. Because, you know, when someone picks up guitar for the first time, the expectations are very different than when someone hears someone sing for the first time. And that's part of where the problem starts, right? So I know for me, it's like, you know, you join fourth grade band, and, you know, you pick an instrument, and the first step is, okay, this is a a trumpet, and this is the mouthpiece. This is how you hold it. This is how you clean it. This is how you put it in your case. You go through several weeks sometimes of being introduced to the instrument before you really learn, or as you're learning, the basic techniques before you sing or before you play. But with singing, you join choir, and it's hey, here's the song we're going to sing. right? So there's a lot of steps I feel have skipped over in that early exposure and understanding the instrument. And I think, if, particularly when we're younger, if we have that basic knowledge and understanding and appreciation to how the instrument works, it makes it very easy to answer the question you just asked is, can you improve? Can you get better? Because the answer is always yes. And if you understand how your instrument works, it's 2 + 2 in the, you know, it's just baby steps moving towards the directions that you want to go in. But you have to look at it from that perspective first. Otherwise, your emotions get ahead of you. You know, I think like Lee mentioned, the fear of failure, or Jared did, in the, you know, there's a lot of cultural expectations that we get very, you know, we struggle within our own ego and fitting in and all of that. So I think that's kind of the first step, is that early education to the voice, I think, would make it much easier for the generations coming up in overcoming these scenarios. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, sure. And I want to kick it back to Brenda here to kind of see how you've gotten more comfortable with your voice, because that fear of failure, many of us have seen the clip of Carl Lewis singing the national anthem and Charlie Steiner on ESPN SportsCenter just absolutely losing it in laughter and said, written by Francis Scott off-key.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, just a sidebar here, we have the worst national anthem on the planet, all right? It is so complicated. It's so hard to sing. It's so high.
But if
nobody
you do it a cappella, you need to be in the right key to start.
Don't send the hate mail, I know, but I think we have the worst national anthem. I wish we had something simpler that was more corporate and we could all share in the experience of singing it.
No, fair enough. And I picked a really egregious one that a lot of us have seen, of someone failing publicly. And what scares us is, well, that's going to be me. Mm-hmm. And now you, 20 years after joining the society and making it, are you more comfortable with your voice now?
I am, and certainly in a choral setting for sure. But I'll tell you experience. When I first started with the Oratorio Society, we did this piece called, I think, The Requiem by John Rutter, and there's this one moment, or maybe it's the Gloria by John Rutter, one moment where there's this trio that plucks a high A flat out of the ether, and I auditioned for that solo part, and I got it, because I could do that in the audition. And then we got to the performance, and I was standing in front of, 800 people at the Asbury United Presbyterian Church or Methodist Church, and it was my turn to pluck that high A flat, you know? And at that moment, my heart was beating so hard, I thought, I literally looked down at my chest because I thought it was coming out like Pepe Le Pew in those Bugs Bunny cartoons. Like, it was a very scary experience. So that's my comfort zone, is singing with groups of people and, singing in the dad band that meets in my living room.
Okay, but if you're in your car and you're singing, do you go, I don't hate my voice so much anymore?
No, I really don't like my voice, but I love to sing, and I keep doing it year after year after pushing myself to do it. So it's a really interesting thing. And I think, like Lee said, most people don't like their own voices, even singers. I'll tell you another story. Last year, the Musician of the Year in Rochester was a wonderful composer and pianist named Kerry Ratcliffe. And they gave a big celebratory concert for him in Kilburn Hall. And they had a lot of RPO musicians there performing his music. And they were amazing. In fact, Ingrid Bach, who's a cellist in town, got up and sat at the edge of the stage and played this cello sonata by Kerry. And then afterwards, there's this little reception. And I went around to all the musicians that were there that had just played, most of them RPO members. And they all pretty much said the same thing. Oh, that was terrible. I wish I could do it. I wasn't on, I wasn't there. So maybe there's something about being a musician or making music, we're just constantly dissatisfied because we have this, running ideal buzzing in the back of our brains.
Well,
I don't
always,
know. What do you guys
we're
think?
We're always hyper self-critical.
Yes.
I mean, that's the process. And Richard, you were alluding to learning about your instrument earlier. And so as musicians, whatever our instrument is, we're in the studio with our private teacher for a very, very long time, many years, many hours, and we're self-analyzing and evaluating. And so it's very rare that you can get to a place where, you can look back at a performance that you've given and say, oh, that was wonderful. As a matter of fact, I've never said that was perfect. I'll say that I was pleased with that, more pleased than others. But I think, too, we're just so hyper self-critical about these moments. I think we got to let that go too, as musicians, as performers.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things that you when you can unlock the personal aspect of performing. And that's another thing that I think about the voice that's really crucial and that holds people back, is it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
Richard, you were talking about picking up your trumpet or another instrument, but when you deal with your voice, it's directly you, and it's your sound, and it's your whatever, it's your being going out there. You can blame your trumpet, you know, if you splat a note or something because the valve didn't work or something
this
wrong.
Guitar
with
is out of tune.
Right, exactly.
we always defer. Yeah.
Exactly. But when it's the voice, you know, we have ownership. We have direct ownership over that, and that's really a hard thing to let go of. But to be successful as in any performing venue, we have to let go of that, and we have to give it to the audience. We have to give ourselves to the audience, and that's really important.
Well, let me go back to what Richard said about being able to work on your voice to train it, and the way once we pick up an instrument, we have to learn sort of a range of things before we can really actually try to perform with it. Which is why I quit viola in second grade, third grade, because my mom had an 8-track of John Denver Live, and John Denver Live had, thank God I'm a country boy. And he ends, you know, the crowd's going nuts. And he says, John Summers played the fiddle and he wrote that song. And I said, well, good, I'm going to be that guy. I want to be that guy because that sounds awesome. And then, of course, they bring the viola in and I pick it up and I try to start doing that and nothing works. And then I went, it's never going to happen. And I never learned it. And I really regret that. The difference with our voices, we don't think of our voice in the same way as an instrument. We think, well, my voice is my voice. And boom, here I go. And if it's not up to sort of training, I guess, and training might be the wrong word, but Richard, if we just go right out of the gate the way third grade Evan did with the viola, we may crash a little bit and go, it's never going to work for me. I'm never going to be able to sing. And that would probably be a mistake, Richard.
Well, it would be a mistake to assume that you can't improve. But, I mean, look, there's no question that some people may have to put more time in or work harder within themselves, their personality, their instrument, their genetic default mixed in with their cultural influences and exposure. Like, for instance, I'm 5'11". If I want to join the NBA, I'm going to have to get really good at the three-point shots. If I have a chance, I'm going to have to work really hard because I have a genetic disposition that makes it more difficult to compete in that particular field. But it doesn't mean that I can't love playing basketball in my hometown and by myself, right? And I think that's really what this is about, too. It's not just about the ones who succeed within their field that they, you know, they strive for singing and they apply it, you know, at church or maybe professionally in the studio or on stage. It's everyone. We all have this incredible instrument, and it's the sadness is that those who have that experience from a parent or sometimes a teacher or a friend that say you can't sing, and they not only decide not to pursue it as a career, you know, which may be something that, you know, that they may be interested in or not, but what's worse is they don't even enjoy their own voice on their own. And that's where my heart breaks, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because they're missing out on not just the health benefits that you mentioned earlier in making marriages better by reducing snoring as a whole, they're missing out on what it can actually do on just even on a mindful or meditative state. And I think it's also important to bring up, Brenda, you asked, you kind of threw out the question of, you know, why do we do this? And the thing is if you go back, you know, even just 500-600 years ago before the theaters were built and the auditoriums and the cathedrals started getting larger and larger for more people, if you go back around that time period, there was very little division between good and bad with singing. It was you singing with your friends and family and neighbors getting together and creating songs and sharing the voice with very little discrepancy between who can and can't. That's something that really developed over time as the need and the demand came with more complex pieces of music reaching bigger audiences, you know, without the aid of the microphone and everything else. So this is something that wasn't innate with us as humans. This is something that evolved.
Brenda, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, Richard, because I have a friend who took lessons with you and said that they went into their lessons really kind of hating the sound of their own voice and came out loving it for the first time in his life. And I'm wondering how you do that. Like, you know, where do you start and how do you get a student to love the sound of their own voice?
Well, everyone comes from a different background. I think sometimes identifying, you know, or acknowledging, you know, the music they were raised in and just their life experience psychologically plays a big role. I think 90% of what I do is a psychological lesson and 10% is actual vocal because it's all one and the same. Like it was pointed out earlier, it's you're connected to your instrument. Really, the steps that I like to take is A, acknowledging that the sound that you make is something that you actually create. It's not just a genetic default. It is something that you actually can manipulate, and that's a big eye-opener. And the next step to improving is removing expectation. You wake up in the morning, you expect your voice to sound a certain way. When you remove that expectation and just grunt or clear throat or hum or speak to a spouse or a child, and you listen to your voice as an instrument, it starts to create a very surreal process and domino effect into acknowledging what you're actually capable of and your ability to manipulate that.
We're talking about International Make Music Day. We've been doing this for 36 years, started in France, and now more than 120 countries around the world are celebrating in various ways. We're focusing a lot on singing, but really it's about making music and just being willing to kind of either pick up an instrument or let your voice go a little bit. And, you know, Lee Wright, I was just thinking, and we were talking about when I heard Richard kind of invoking 500-600 years ago and how Spotify wasn't as popular. Most people didn't have the internet. You know, you couldn't just download whatever music you wanted. So more people played music. I mean, not everybody, but I mean, it was much more ubiquitous in homes because if you wanted music, you had to create the music yourself. And now think about the holidays. If carolers show up in your neighborhood, I get excited. I like that. Some people think it's kind of weird. Or, you know, if you go to a holiday party, you go to a Christmas party and there's people sitting around a piano singing, it's always two or three people in the family and the rest kind of having a drink, drinking more heavily, looking at them like, okay. And that's totally unfair. Why don't more of us do it? It's almost stigmatized, I think, in a weird way.
There certainly is a societal pressure to be great. And, you know, and the idea that we idolize a singer or, you know, that someone with a good voice is to be revered and it's something that we can't do. And, you know, one of my specialties actually is looking at the African-American spiritual. And I've read, you know, accounts from the 19th century of people watching former slaves sing and talking about the uninhibited, perfect beauty of it, and then in the same sentence saying, and that's something that we can't access, you know, and it's become a mission for me to think, you know, really, is it about race? Is it, you know, is it a racial thing that, you know, that these people can sing uninhibitedly and you know, and other people can't? And I think, no, absolutely not. But it's about a culture of confidence, of a lack of inhibition, of improvisation, a culture where it's okay to improvise, and it's something that so in so many cultures we sort of squash, and you know the free spirited person is often smiled at and chuckled at, but you know, well, they're not really refined enough to fit in all these venues. And and I, you know, the recording industry, you mentioned Spotify, and Richard, I think, said the microphone. These things that alter the human voice, and then when we hear it every day as real, and suddenly think that, wow, this is how these people actually sound. Mm. And there's so much manipulation. I mean, auto-tuning has been around forever, and we don't even know when it's employed. But the voice is so delicate. The voice is so prone to minor deficiencies, which is why we have all this technology to make that go away.
Yeah, and yeah. So I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, I don't want to come off as too Pollyanna, but I wonder if the Simon Cowells of the world have really injured it, because the people who actually put themselves out there, it's almost sport to knock them down, instead of at least honoring the effort. So we kind of take pleasure in meanness about our own voices and who can and can't sing and who doesn't meet a certain threshold. And then I think, as you talk about different venues and culturally, I look around any city in the country, different churches. Lee, there are some churches that just rock it. They're a lot of fun. And then there are some that's kind of drudgery when it comes to the music. Mm-hmm. And they're a little more reticent to cut it loose. Mm-hmm. You know, like, sing with us. And, you know, one third of the audience is singing and it's a little, you know, I don't know. Whereas others, congregations are, everyone is up and everyone's moving. And Gerard, you're going
to I think we need to really kind of put a line in the sand somewhere. But I think, you know, the idea of just singing to sing and to join the choir in a figurative sense is a wonderful thing. And then there is that the industry, right? Then there's the recording industry, mm-hmm. and the people that get paid a lot of money to do this kind of thing or make their careers on it. And so there's different levels of that, but the problem with those two worlds colliding is that the comparison factor is really what I think deters people and gets people discouraged from putting themselves out there and letting their own voice be heard at whatever quality and whatever level that would be.
And I would say in this town especially, there is a choir, there's a place for everyone who wants mm-hmm. to sing. In fact, my colleague Mona Segatola-Slame in Classical 91.5 has assembled a complete list. There's a choral society in Rochester too mm-hmm. that has a pretty complete list of like 35 choirs that aren't even affiliated with churches that, sure, you know, right. something mm-hmm. for the gay mm-hmm. men's chorus, mm-hmm. the Sweet Adelines, you know, there is a place for everyone. And if you do want to sing, you know, there's a place for you to go and you'll feel great.
Right. And so much, I think the problem with, if I could put this into a larger context, the problem with our society and the problem with our society and our country even more today is that we're comparing everything all the time, or somebody is. You know, somebody's yeah. comparing yeah. this to that and to the other thing.
I like this wine, but is it as good as what we drank last week?
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
Let me pull up my notes.
Yeah. But it's wonderful in its own right, and we're enjoying
comparing.
It now,
yeah.
right? Yeah. So I think we have to try and avoid that danger, that minefield yeah. of comparison and this versus that, or this is better than that, and just say this is what it is right now, and it's beautiful.
Or yeah, I'm cutting it loose a little, but you know, my neighbor's better. I don't know. I think that's such a good point. Before we get our only break of the hour on International Make Music Day, and we're going to bring in our colleague Maureen Rich to share her story, which is going to be a lot of fun. I do want to just, because I've got Gerard Floriano here, who's the artistic director of the Finger Lakes Opera, I've got two sort of opera questions.
Okay.
We've done an opera intervention on this program, which I had a great time with. I have asked and sort of wondered, it's one thing to say, am I willing to kind of cut it loose and sing a little in the shower, in the car, around other people, at parties, on stage? It's a whole other thing to me to figure out I can sing in an operatic fashion. How do you even figure that out?
Wow, that's a big question. But really, it goes back to what Richard was saying earlier.
I want you to know, I think I might be able to do it.
All right.
Before
all right,
this hour, I may try.
Right at 2 o'clock today. We're going to do an audition right outside the room here. Bring a wheel of piano in here.
But how do you figure it out? Is it a young age usually?
That's something that develops over time, and you develop the ability to sing and different styles too. And as we said earlier in the program, there is a genetic disposition toward one thing or another. And I think certain people have larger instruments, bigger voices. Some people have more have smaller voices at their best when they're really humming along, and they're better in other kinds of music. Let's say pop, or let's say you know, early music or something like that. So it depends on your training, certainly. That's really paramount. But also it depends on what you can handle.
Okay, so there is it's not like you're going to just wake up one day and say, yes, I can do it. There's a lot of training involved to get there along the way.
and to hit the steps along the way. And then sometimes, you know, people's voices will dramatically change mm-hmm. at certain ages, you know, as they mature. I mean, there are examples. Well, Jen Rowley, for example, our Tosca from last summer, was a high coloratura soprano in the early part of her career, and then took a year off and switched over and became a dramatic soprano, singing all of the major dramatic soprano roles, Tosca included. And so that voice shifted and found its niche.
Yeah, really. The same thing happened to Gregory Kundi, who's mm-hmm. a well-known tenor.
Absolutely.
He was singing all Rossini roles, and then he got into his late 50s, I think, and he changed over to a darker, started
Absolutely.
Singing Verdi.
Yeah, Greg, who sang Don Jose with us in Carmen in 2014.
Yeah, and he was named the top opera singer in Europe last year, and he lives in Rochester.
Right, and he's and he's hitting his, you know, still in his prime.
Yeah, and he's in his early 60s, and he's booked up for the next three or four years. So there's always room for growth, always room for change.
Evan, there's time for you.
There's time. I love it. I'm going to learn piano. I don't know about the about the viola, but piano, yes, and who knows, opera singing. And by the way, since our guests are generous with their time on International Make Music Day, spending an hour of that in a studio, not making music, I am, before the hour is up, going to ask each of them to tell you a little bit about what's going on in their sort of corners of music. So, Gerard, this is a great moment for me to ask you what's going on with Finger Lakes Opera right now.
Oh, thanks, Evan. Finger Lakes Opera, we're entering our sixth season, and our second season at Canandaigua. We'll be performing performances and productions August 10th through the 12th. Our main stage production is Die Fledermaus. It is a charming, lovely, frolicking, comedic opera, which we'll be singing, operetta, I should say, in English with English supertitles. We have a wonderful and brilliant ensemble cast, and we're also adding a young artist program. We've added a young artist program this summer, and we'll have six young professional singers. Our main production of Die Fledermaus is peopled with or cast with 100% professional big-time singers from all over, literally all over the country in Europe. But our young artists are coming to us, like I said, young professionals, and they'll be doing a couple performances, a free children's opera called Little Red's Most Adventuresome Day on Saturday morning, the 11th at 10:30 in Canandaigua. They'll be doing some scenes runouts around the community in the lead up to that weekend, and then also an evening at the Opera Pops with our Finger Lakes Opera Orchestra and singers. So that's all August 10th through the 12th in Canandaigua. You can find us fingerlakesopera.org, all the information there.
Great stuff. It is International Make Music Day. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we will come back, continue the discussion. You just heard Gerard Floriano, who is Artistic Director of Finger Lakes Opera, Lee Wright, the founder of the First Inversion Choir and the Director of Music Ministry at Downtown Presbyterian Church, Brenda Tremblay, our colleague from Classical 91.5, is here with us, and Richard Fink IV is on the line with us, a vocal coach and founder of Throga. Definitely the best new word to hit the dictionary when and if it does. Let's get that break and come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, there's a stereotype that conservatives either don't believe in climate change or don't think we should really do anything about it with policy because it would be too detrimental to the economy. You will meet some conservatives who disagree and say there are policy solutions for climate change. Then second hour, Matt Savage, a piano player with autism who's going to bring down the house at the Rochester Jazz Festival. Welcome back here to Connections on International Make Music Day, and our colleague Maureen Rich, who's producer for WXXI's Reach Out Radio and a member of Tasty Parker and the Joyriders, which is the best band name ever. We're all going around, where's Maureen? You were outside making music?
I was. I was in the High Falls there since it's Make Music Day. Brenda had mentioned it to me a couple weeks ago, and finally I said, yeah, I think I can do it between 1:15 and 1:30, and then I've got recordings to do and whatnot. So
I love that. All right, so you know, we've been talking about getting over our fear of sometimes performing, sometimes just singing, getting comfortable with our own voice.
Yes.
And I want to kind of talk a little bit about what your story is and how you ended up with Tasty Parker and the Joyriders.
Oh, I don't
because
know
you didn't come out of the womb in Tasty Parker and the Joyriders. You didn't grow up.
No.
Doing
no,
that.
No, I think, I always loved music, you know, as a listener and a participant. It seemed like most of the good things that happened to me were around music. All the good times. I met my husband when we were hearing music, and so it was always a part of my life. And then and my husband played guitar here and there a little bit, but I was, you know, limited to shower singing and, you know, bedtime. story. You know, my daughter had me singing, you know, three, four, another song, five songs before bed. So that was the limit of my singing.
Sure.
Until in my 50s or so. And we went to Las Vegas when my daughter turned 21 for New Year's. And we were at the Hard Rock Cafe one of those places.
Sure.
Anyway.
Yep.
And they were having rock star karaoke. And so I said, oh, my God, you know, we have to do this where a band plays behind you and, you know, you sing whatever song you choose, you know. So, like, we have to do this. And they were all like, no. You know, and I'm like, come on, you're in Las Vegas. And, you know, so anyway, I guess I got up on stage, and I will not lie, I did have a couple gin and tonics before I did it.
Sure.
And sang Proud Mary. And, you know, I was like, wow, that was so much fun. And, you know, I just kept following the, you know, but really with little confidence at all, you know. And
did you like the sound of your own voice?
No, I still don't, you know, in a way, but I, you know, get comfortable with it.
Maureen has a fantastic singing voice. I mean, she can really, really belt it out.
So what we're discovering this hour is if you hate the sound of your own voice, you are only in roughly 99% of the population. So that doesn't mean anything about the quality, right?
Technically, you can't hear your own voice. You cannot. You are the only person in the world that hears your voice the way you do.
Yep.
Everyone else hears it better.
Hears it better.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, that's the hope, I guess.
We've all had those moments where you hear yourself in recording and you go, who's that guy? What?
Yes.
That's me? Which, by the way, before we get back to Maureen's story, Richard, that's common, right? That's okay if you hear your voice.
Oh, yeah, and there's a technical explanation for it. It's actually called bone conduction. So when your vocal folds are vibrating in your larynx, your Adam's apple there, the sound waves don't just travel out the vocal tract, out your mouth. It travels in every direction. So the sound waves are passing through your cartilage and blood and skin and bone, and that vibrates into your ear. So you hear sympathetic frequencies within yourself that's not possible for other people to hear. And that's why we don't recognize ourselves in a recording versus what we hear in ourselves.
Hmm. Okay, see, look, there's the science of our own voice now. And we're going to get to your phone calls as well. If you're on the phone, people want to share their stories, which is great. So Maureen, you may not have loved the sound of your own voice, but number one, you have this great experience after a couple of gin and tonics, and it's fun. But then, how do you end up then performing the way you did? What was the road there?
Well, I, you know, like I said, I did it with very little confidence and just like, you know, ever inching forward. And people seemed to like it. And, you know, gosh, it just felt so great to me, you know. And so that was what made me keep doing it. But, you know, also overcoming the idea that somebody tells you, you can't sing. You
should
sing.
Which you heard.
Yes.
People said that to you?
Oh, yeah, growing up. You know, like your brothers and sisters or, you know, somebody's like, shut up. You can't sing anyway. You know, not in a serious way, exactly, but you know,
it's
what
hurtful.
People say, and
yeah.
You know,
oh,
yes. You just take things in.
We are all delicate flowers about our own voice,
yes.
Usually. So you hear one,
exactly.
A little bit of that, and you go, oh boy. Okay, and so now you're doing what?
So, you know, I just kept following my instinct about it, and my husband was playing more guitar, and he would like, you know, we started picking songs we liked together, and then our friends started to join in, and you know, it just seemed to snowball, because we were just having so much fun. It was just such a joy, and it attracted all these like-minded people to us, I think. And so pretty soon we had a band together, and I mean a couple of years, and it was just like, oh my gosh, what are we doing? But we just kept doing it because it felt so good.
Who is Tasty Parker?
Tasty Parker is, it's my alter ego, really, which kind of helps me a little bit sometimes. And it you know, it's my, the actually it came up during a jazz fest. We were just sitting around in between things. And so I said, well, what would your superhero, or what would your superpowers be if you were a real life superhero? And when it got around to me, I was like, well, I can parallel park. Like crazy. My father-in-law was a Teamster truck driver, and he taught all of us how to park. And so I can parallel park really well. and I can taste something and tell you what's in it. So somebody said, "Oh, Tasty Parker." You know, I'm like, "Yeah, that's my superhero name." So,
Tasty Parker.
Yes.
That's so good. And where do you perform? Where can we see Tasty Parker and the Joyriders?
Well, we play with our friends right now. We don't play a lot in the summer gigs.
High Falls outside sometimes.
Yeah, wherever, yeah. You know. I can't give you anything
Little
right
Cafe?
Now that you could. Yes,
you've done,
yes,
Little Cafe.
Yes, the Little Cafe. We played out at the Argyle out in Penfield, Fairport, and, you know, Brew Crafters, and we've played around town a bit.
All right, so before I grab some phone calls, let me just ask you, Maureen, as someone who grew up hearing people seriously or half-seriously telling you, oh, you can't sing, and you didn't sing much, and then in your 50s you discover this, that not only can you really sing, but people want to hear you sing. You spent a lot of years not really singing very much.
Yeah.
And I said earlier in the hour, I don't know if I'm being Pollyanna, but I don't think the Simon Cowells of the world do us much good, because we make sport of making fun of people when they just want to do something that should be joyful, which is singing.
Yes.
What do you now, how do you feel about it when people, even if they're ribbing others, don't sing, you can't sing, et cetera? Do you find yourself kind of checking yourself?
I'm not perfect either, you know, but yeah, I think it's unfortunate, you know, when people really discourage someone from doing something that gives them so much pleasure. I don't know. I guess I don't have a good answer to that.
Well, I mean, you've got a lot of joy in your life out of singing.
Yeah, it really has been a huge source of joy for me. And I would hope for other people too. Other people to sing, and just give it a shot, you know, or find whatever it is.
Yeah.
That brings it to you. That's what brings it to me. Music in general, but geez, singing is the best.
Yeah.
You
all right.
Kept emphasizing the joy and the fun that you have.
Yes.
And that's what people want to hear. And if you look at, you know, any range of famous singers in the world, oftentimes it's not necessarily exactly the sound of their voice that we're all attracted to. It's what they bring to their performance. And it's usually the fact that they're having fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let me grab a few phone calls. We'll see what our audience has to say. I'm going to start with Caleb in Pittsford. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. I admire my wife even more because she misses more notes than she hits. Because she sings with such unabandoned joy and nobody can stop her. And I sang through eighth grade and stopped out of fear. And then we have hosted folk concerts, and they have you sing along, and a choir director, you guys might have heard the name, Ted Ashizawa.
Oh, yeah, I know
was,
Ted.
A choir director, he's mm-hmm. passed away a few years ago, was sitting beside me and said, "You can hold a note. You ought to sing with a choir." So I joined the First Unitarian Church Choir, and I've been singing for 11 years, and it's been such joy to be able to do. And my wife and I were going to a Springsteen show that we didn't get into. And we leave, and she goes, "Let's sing." So we just sang on the way home, and it just was so great. And Bruce, when you talk about people, he didn't always have a great quality voice. I think it's developed a lot over the years. It's his enthusiasm. And then he also does encourage kids. He gets kids up singing 5-6 years old during some of his shows, and it doesn't matter whether they can hit a note. And those kids, I think some of them are going to grow up to be famous because they've been encouraged. So I just wanted to add that statement about the importance of encouragement and singing for the joy of it. Mm.
Caleb, thank you. I love that. I love the support, by the way, that he has for his wife.
Absolutely.
There.
And I think what you say, Caleb, is so true. In music and in the arts, we encourage. You know, we encourage people to do it. And that's one of the great things about what we do, is that there's nobody that's left out, really. I mean, especially at the early ages. You know, you'll figure it out eventually, and you'll get involved with it. But keep doing it, and you're gonna be okay.
Good stuff. Let me get Tony in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey there. So first I want to say hi to Lee. It's I know you, Lee. I hope you know what I mean.
I know you, Lee.
It sounds rather ominous,
Tony. Hi, Tony.
Yeah. So when I first heard the promo for this, I remembered my first thought was, you know, when I was a little kid, like young kid. The idea, the very idea of singing out loud and being heard, I mean, my face would turn red. I would be completely and thoroughly embarrassed by the whole thing. Mm. And then, you know, in elementary school, I started doing, you know, the choir. And I'm like, okay, this is safe. I'm like in this group of people. And I can sing a little softer and nobody else has to hear. But now I'm actually told that I actually have a good voice. So who knows? I don't know if Lee's ever heard my voice.
You stuck with it.
Well, you need. I know you visited the church once. You need to visit on a choir rehearsal day, and because I don't think I've ever heard you sing, Tony, but I'm sure I'd love your voice.
Yeah, and we've been talking about
the way you engage the everybody that's there. You do a great job leading not just the choir but everybody.
Oh well,
thank you.
Awesome. Well, Tony, you're going to see Lee then. For a choir meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony. Go ahead, Brenda.
I just want to underscore that point. You know, not only the joy of singing, but, you know, if in a choir, you're also building community. You're connecting with other human beings. I mean, so many people in our society are lonely, and they're sitting home scrolling through social media. And I'll tell you, walk into a choir practice, find the choir for you. 3 hours of your life are going to fly by, and you're going to drive home with endorphins firing in your brain like you will not believe. It is such a joyful experience. And more than just making music, if you Google where to play and sing, WXXI, you'll find a fairly comprehensive list of all the choirs, not church choirs, but just all the possible choirs in town that welcome members. Most of them are free. Most of them are welcoming. They're all welcoming, you know, absolutely.
I've got listeners sending emails keying in on some of the really popular names in the music world who aren't necessarily great singers but have been very popular. Robert says Bob Dylan never let his voice stand in the way. I've got a couple of emails on Elvis Costello. And I would just say from my own perspective, I think the objective worst voice of a popular band ever, and this is just being, I don't mean to be rude, but he's nothing special, but he's very popular, and it's Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler doesn't blow your doors off singing, but his music's fabulous, and
he's
doesn't
so
care.
He's so smooth, though.
Oh, you like Mark. So Maureen and I are going to fight on Mark Knopfler.
Yeah.
No, he's smooth. He's just not great. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I think that goes back to what was said earlier, I believe Jared was pointing out, was that, you know, if you look at Bruce Springsteen, who's notoriously not necessarily skillful on a musical level in terms of vocal execution.
Sure.
And then you've got someone else popular like Celine Dion, who has high expectations on the skill level. What they have in common is vulnerability. It's that, and that's what we're so attracted to. It's beyond just the immediate timbre or their ability to match a note or hold out a note. The consistency that we're attracted to and that respond to emotionally and that draws us to them, and obviously each to their, you know, each to its own, is the level of vulnerability. And I'm actually curious, Lee, with you mentioned you've got a familiar background with the African culture, the music and everything there. It's my understanding that still there's a lot of tribes there that they don't even have a word that separates singing from dance, that they see the movement of the body vocally or visually as one thing. And it's expressed. It's a term of self-expression.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of, you know, of movement and singing being completely combined, interwoven. You don't sing without moving. That would be weird. you know, and also I think that points to there are other barriers that we put up and want to see black and white, that in other cultures there's a much more gray, in a very helpful way. But I want to thank you for saying the word vulnerability. That's exactly it. You know, even more than seeing that someone's enjoying themselves or putting themselves into it, it's that vulnerability that we latch into. And, you know, I was just thinking when you were mentioning some names, Evan, you know, Nina Simone was one of my favorite artists of all time. And her voice was very rough. Raw, you know,
emotional,
and wow, just so amazing. Now, if she had come into my choir and sang like that, I might have said, "Well, now why don't you try?" you know, a little bit of this blend. Let's see if we can find one voice here with everyone. And there is a difference between, you know, what you can do as a soloist and what you can do in a choir to sound quote unquote good, or at least to bring that choir to sound the best that it can. And the voice is so flexible.
Well, we're all ready to run through a wall and sing. And before the hour's out, we got to get a phone call in from a Tasty Parker fan. This is Cora in Naples. Hi, Cora. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi. My particular life story began with a trauma that left me deaf at age 3. Not totally deaf, but enough to be hard of hearing. Yet I've spent my whole life in music, whether it was in radio, working in record stores, or playing music. Maureen knows me, Maureen and Eric.
I do.
I was at their wedding years ago.
You were.
And I've never stopped singing, and it's never been an impediment to my singing. I think also of people like Bob. I constantly say Bob Dylan, Louis Armstrong, and Willie Nelson are the three finest voices of the 20th century. None of them have gorgeous voices, but they knew how to use it to be effective with the messages they were putting across. And whether it was just joy of music or joy of humanity, they did it. They did it for all of us.
I love the word joy. Yeah. Cora, thank you. The word joy has come up a lot this hour. And that's so relevant, isn't it, Maureen?
For me, it is. But that emotional part of it is the hardest and the most rewarding part, too, I think. And it's hardest to talk about.
All right. Well, before we lose the hour here, Tasty Parker and the Joyriders, find them when you can find them around town.
Yes.
Absolutely. FingerLakesOpera.org for the schedule. A lot going on this summer.
A lot going on this summer. Yeah,
and I know that's exciting for you guys. Lee Wright, who's the founder of First Inversion Choir, what do you want the audience to hear? Should they come find you?
Yeah, come to firstinversion.org. And our next performances after this summer will be on the Fringe Festival, which I'm not at freedom to talk about.
Oh, yeah, don't mention it because no one's listening.
We won't tell anybody.
You'll hear all about the show when the Fringe Festival goes viral on July 10th.
Awesome. And Richard Fink IV, how do they find you?
You can go to throga.com. That's throga. And I have a book on Amazon called Seven Dimensions of Singing.
Awesome stuff. And by the way, if you're joining us late, Throga is throat yoga. Brilliant. Richard, thanks for taking the time for us. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And Brenda, I'll hear you every morning as we always do. We had some fun, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. And go sing. Everyone, go sing.
I was going to say, it was a gift to the audience that we didn't all sing, but that's the wrong attitude. You know, let's celebrate the joy that comes from it. Let's not shut each other down.
Roll,
make music
roll,
however you
roll
like.
Your boat
there you go.
Gently down the street.
Oh, take us out, everybody.
Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
We'll see you tomorrow on Connections. All right.